Welcome to Nosecast. Homilies delivered in the Holy Gnosis of Thomas Chapel, the Ecclesia Gnostica, in Salt Lake City, Utah, by the Reverend Troy Pierce.
With two rather large clusters of things in my mind, I've come to recall for some reason a comment made when people were trying to delay the vote in the United Nations about creating a Jewish state in Palestine. And they went and asked one of these sympathetic members of the UN if he would filibuster for about an hour. And his reply was, "Oh, my dear fellow, for me, an hour is merely making a few remarks. It's not a filibuster." I feel like I want to make a few remarks, but not quite that many. The Assumption of the Holy Sophia is one of our highest high holy days. It is a uniquely Gnostic focus, but it's on a day that we share a particular focus with much of Christendom, the Western Christianity, Roman Catholicism. In less recent history, this was called the Dormition of the Holy Mary, and Dormition, the falling asleep, the passing away. Probably aware of that in liturgical calendars, the day that is celebrated is not the birthday, it's the day that a saint died. And so this is the day of Mary, Mother of Jesus. Then this has been a day that has had an ever-growing focus, shall we say. Holy Sophia was a part of early Christian tradition. She was part of what's called the wisdom literature, pre-Christian tradition. The Book of Solomon, the Wisdom of Solomon, text that came out after the majority of the canon that we call the Bible was written, was put together. Sometimes called the intertestamental period, after the Old Testament part was put together. There were these other texts. This wisdom literature lived. And this figure of wisdom became very central and important. The wisdom of God. Wisdom of this transcendent father figure, God. And in the Wisdom of Solomon, there are some very interesting and quite astute observations. One passage, it talks about what in modern logic, computer science, mathematics, we call enumerability. The sands of a beach can be counted, but the days that wisdom was with the father cannot be counted. It is a type of transcendent infinity, cannot ever be counted. It's a different aspect, something transcendent. This figure, Sophia, has her fullest flowering in Gnostic tradition, but she continues on in Eastern Orthodox. The Hagia Sophia, the great domed chapel, one of the wondrous places of the world, not an outright wonder of the world, was built in her honor, this figure of wisdom. Cities named Sophia after this figure in the Eastern European part of the world. Some capitals still named Sophia, towns. Later on, a kind of a cover story is thrown over Sophia as Saint Sophia, a figure whose daughters were faith, hope, charity, quite literally. That's where the names. You smell an allegory coming up. And while the Saint Sophia didn't die a martyr's death, her three daughters did, and she remained true. That's how she got to be a saint. Well, this is clearly just a story, an apocryphal story, an allegory. Kind of a clumsy allegory, too. Of wisdom who holds true through her three daughters, faith, hope, and charity, being martyred. And this is how more the Western Christendom kind of covered up and got rid of Sophia. Eastern Orthodoxy, she remained. A little bit more conservative of symbolic aspects. And they've yet to go through a rationalization process that is anywhere near the depths that Western Christendom goes through from time to time. Reformation being the big event. But various other things in different denominations at different points happen in the West. East, hold on a little bit more to the mystery, to the symbol. So we have the figure of Sophia and icons, which have my version a couple places in the chapel. We have her on a winged throne, dressed in red. We have her as a ruler figure. She's not an angelic figure, because it isn't her that is winged, but the throne she's upon that is winged. She is enthroned on spirit, not a messenger herself. And she is usually holding a scroll, holding a book. And this happens in Eastern Orthodox iconography, holding a spear, something that pierces through, something that cuts through what might otherwise block someone. So we have this figure, Sophia in the East, still there, hints and pieces. There was a large sort of theological argument that tried to reduce her to being merely the wisdom of Christ, a iconographic representation of the wisdom of Christ. If that makes sense to you, please explain it to me. It does in some ways. And these figures are never completely person, shall we say. There's something very personal about wisdom, about this figure, Sophia. There is a rich goddess tradition before this that many have tried to weave her into as an expression of. I was growing up, always liked Athena. It was my fave among the Greek pantheon, Minerva among the Romans, goddess of wisdom, crafts, of capabilities. But there is no actual continuity here, nor with Isis, nor any of these other figures, because this figure, Sophia, has always been less of a goddess figure, more associated with some other transcendent element, the one who is with God from the beginning, whose days spent with God cannot be counted, who is also with us, whom, as a lesson for today, says we seek to have her labor with us, to work with us, so that we may know and do what is pleasing to the Father, to the transcendent. So she is never merely a goddess. Let's be frank, to be a goddess isn't really all that impressive, because there's at least a couple dozen other ones, strictly. In late antiquity, with the Romans, they just kept collecting them. So this is not a positive force, shall we say, as some people might think of it. There was such a long period, particularly coming out of the Protestant movement, to get rid of the Marian elements, the feminine elements, be very much this masculine father image, son image. And so to break through that, to find something of a feminine quality, be a great liberating force. But one can go too far. It's not the feminine element, it's the liberation. In Buddhist teachings, there's a saying I quite like, as all the oceans have the same taste, that of salt, all the Dharma has the same taste, and that is liberation. In our tradition, it's phrased differently. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. You can see the same kind of continuity. It's not the way people market, shall we say, their religion or their understanding. They have the truth as information or as something they hold that they can give you, and you can get a metaphorical freedom from it eventually. Freedom from some ultimate damnation or something that's way off in the distance somewhere. But as being something that we have now, if we know the truth now, we are more free. And every little increment we get of truth leads to more freedom. And we can also reverse that, say that as we are more free, we know more truth. That if you have to decide between, say, two propositions, the one that is more free is probably more true. Truth is always clothed in some form, is never raw here, never the naked truth, the Gospel of Philip says. But every movement towards it is a freeing movement. We gain more freedom from that, more liberation. So this movement towards liberation is very common in a Gnostic understanding. And when we break through something, we sense that freedom, we sense that truth. Sophia has been one of those breaking through points for so many of us. To realize that presence is liberating, then stay with that image, then be perhaps confining not too far down the road. We must always focus on the liberating, on the transcendent. Not stick with a particular image or a particular understanding as if it were the ultimate truth. Because whatever does not free us, the reverse of that saying, is not the truth. Whatever confines us is not the truth. So we can follow wisdom, follow this figure of Sophia, in a way that is truthful, a way that liberates us. We do not get stuck with one understanding, with one image. Do not seek for the nearest thing to compare it to and think we understand it. That's the type of fallacy we do in our minds. That if we can compare it to something that we think we understand or know its name of, the nominative fallacy, that we have somehow understood it, we somehow gained something from that, merely by naming it, merely by associating it. It can be a part of the process. It is by no means the end of the process. To really understand this figure, we must have gnosis of her. Not gnosis from the tradition, the history, but gnosis from within ourselves. The figure, Sophia, is with the Father, is with us. Transcends this seeming abyss, this gap, this gulf between ourselves and the transcendent divine. She is nearer to us than we are to ourselves. She is also beyond us. Today, in her story, we celebrate the Assumption. And the particular casting of this holiday is a reflection of Roman Catholic dogma. For in the Western Church, unlike the Eastern Church, they got rid of Sophia. And really the only figure who stayed strong was Mary, Mother. And she became a very central figure of devotion. It's very easy to see that so many churches and so forth, there are a few images of Christ here and there, but they're rarely to be seen not as a child figure with Mary. But really, these are mythologically, psychologically pointing towards this feminine element of God, which in the rationalized structure has been removed, but can never be removed from people's experience. And that's something that they know. They have their gnosis of, and you can't tell them otherwise when somebody has their own gnosis, their own experience, their own understanding. And so in the 50s was declared a dogma that Mary didn't actually die. She didn't have this dormition. It wasn't a death, it was a falling asleep, and it was an assumption. She was raised bodily into heaven, made the counterpart of Christ in the theology, in the dogma, just as she has been in the practice for centuries, in the iconography, in the hearts and minds of the people. And this, in Jung's work, Answer to Job, we saw as heralding kind of an incarnation of Sophia as a balance point to Christ. And however we might look at this ourselves, this is a very strong present figure. Very present with us, very transcendent also. So much so that in much of Gnostic literature, she's seen as two figures. There's the immanent Sophia, the one who is here, who has fallen into the world, who is with us, and the transcendent. We have to, in order to make sense of this, split her into two. She is one. The gospel for today is from Pistis Sophia, faithful wisdom. And it is recounted the ascent, the coming of Sophia back out of the chaos into the light. How this is done is not with just a helping hand, reach down, yank you up, send you a bus ticket. It's very much about the way that the spiritual life is lived. She finds herself without her power, her own power, her own motive ability. And what she is given when she cries out to the light is her own power back. She receives the light that she had lost back. The light stream comes back to her, the story says. And having received back her own power, she can ascend herself. So many ways, another aspect of Sophia is our own souls, our own spirits, fallen into this realm of chaos, of darkness, seeking to return to our transcendent place. Beyond this world, beyond this darkness. And so she is paragon of our own journey, and we can look to and learn from, to follow instead. For the story of Sophia isn't like the story of Christ so much. It's more mythical, more symbolic. It doesn't take place in any kind of a historical setting. It also is more directly something that relates to us as people seeking our own salvation than those trying to understand the message of salvation. It's like another layer in the story of Jesus. Here's him trying to teach us thick-headed humans here in the world who haven't become awakened to our own divinity, our own spark of consciousness. And there's also his story of giving those teachings, of having disciples, of being betrayed, of suffering, of having people realize that was not the end of him. But we can more closely identify with the story of Sophia. We have fallen, find ourselves in darkness and chaos, and we often feel as though we do not have our own motive light, our own power to move. And so we can cry out to the transcendent, to the light beyond. And the way in which one finds one's own salvation, one's own redemption, one's own liberation, however you want to phrase it, is oneself. You do it. It isn't done for you, but you are given aid, assistance, your own power back to move towards further liberation. And that is how these things work. No one can do it for you, but you can be aided in what you do, your own path. And to be in the darkness is not an end of the path. So in many ways, it is just a beginning. Beginning of then orienting yourself towards the light again. Being able to focus, move yourself towards that. And to always know that this connection to the transcendent is the deepest part of yourself. That the aid is there. You call upon it. You focus on it. You allow it to come. If you hold it off with some idea of yourself, or thinking that I can do it myself, then it's not that the help isn't there, that you're not receiving it. Or if you refuse to seek it, it will not come. There has to be some action of your own. You cannot receive divine aid and be the plaything of fate. You have to take some action, recognize, have some gnosis of where you are, where you are going. And the aid is there. It's not always the form that you might like, you know, nice cashable aid, something you take to the bank, but it is sustaining because it is more of who you truly are, more of that light that is transcendent. In choosing a day to be ordained, this made the most sense to me. As all my life I have sought after this figure wisdom, this thing wisdom, and been quite a devotee of wisdom. That is merely a direction, merely a way of going forward. The process of becoming clergy in our tradition is quite a long one. It's a process of transformation. Call it formation. One moves through various different stages in this, different stages of understanding, different stages of becoming more of who you are, different stages of experience with what is involved in this particular tradition, what one can do that might be of service to others. And when one begins a process, 7 years to ordination seems way too long. And yet, before one is ordained, it often can seem quite short. Perhaps too short. There is quite a lot involved, and it is on the level of being where it is the most important. But it is only one element and aspect of the Church. In our tradition, everyone is in holy orders who participates. The holy order of the laity is a holy order that serves the ultimate purpose of the Church. And so we are all quite literally in this together. Generally, we come from other traditions and other forms, and the metaphor that has been coming to my mind of late has been that of being institutionalized, the way somebody who spends a long time in an institution, such as a prison or something, is so adapted to that system that they have a hard time taking their own life in their hands afterwards, being responsible and so forth. We live in an age where religion has institutionalized so many of us, an institutionalized religion. We're used to having this religion, a church, as a parental figure, a something that lays down what you're supposed to do, when you're supposed to do it, all these forms and rules that are much more firm. Whereas in our tradition, it's not really a parental figure. It's more of a friend, a figure that might be of guidance, because metaphorically as a figure, it stretches back 2,000 years. It's a community of practice that includes elements of others, particularly focused on the Gnostic path, those before that returned to the forefront, interested in the inner aspects of Christianity, and stretching back further to all these forms, symbols, back even further to the original mysteries. That is what we are attempting to do in this, and why one becomes a priest, why one celebrates the mysteries as I've done for 5 years now. In our tradition, it's not so big a deal, 5 years. Just getting started. Had priest in Portland have his 15th anniversary, and of course our bishop, 40 years. Why one does so is to convey these mysteries, and through them touch the transcendent, and gain that wisdom. Wisdom, that gnosis that is both of ourselves and of the transcendent, that bridges between the two. For wisdom is the flower of gnosis. It is what we seek to gain, to have, to become. And it is through gnosis that we gain this. And all of these things can be gone, can go easily. It's a mere transient moment. There have been services held in Salt Lake City now for about a dozen years. But before that, there weren't. So many parts of the world, these things do not exist as this. This focus is not there. And without the focus on the mystery, on the transforming effect on the individual, it still has some power. But it is a bit remote, a bit removed. Having the living mysteries is very important. Something that we can participate in, gain from, and grow from. So, although this is, say, an impossible task to provide something like this, even in, say, far from ideal circumstances as we have here, it is a worthwhile task that one is called to do, is a joy to do. For in connecting through this service, we are not merely the few who are here. Explicit in the liturgy that we join with some timeless transcendent way all those who have participated in this mystery before us and will participate after us. The language talks about this being celebrated in heaven. It is a transcendent moment of connection beyond all time, beyond the limitations of where we may find ourselves, connected with all those who have come before us and those who will come after. Connected as a horizontal arm of cross to the vertical arm through wisdom, through Sophia, through Gnosis, through Christ, to the transcendent reality we come from and are on our path to return to. So this becomes a place of refreshment, of renewal, a place where a timeless moment is suspended and touched. It is not a place for complacency, place for ego, place for self-congratulation. For every service is a new beginning, trying to touch that eternal moment, and failing to do so in different ways, as limitations of being people have. It's also succeeding in different ways, which is a very precious thing to have, to be able to touch beyond this form, this time, this place. To become renewed by the spring of life, of bubbling water, scriptures tell us, that lies just beyond the appearance of things. So it is a worthwhile thing to carry on the form, the tradition of church, in an age where that is such a quaint thing, such an odd thing, particularly one that doesn't prescribe a whole lot of things for you to do, that doesn't act as a parent, and also doesn't act as a, you should give it an allowance either, but as a friend to all of us, as a fellow participant in our own journeys, something given to us by all those who've gone before, beginning with Christ himself in a particular form and intention, but also stretching beyond him even, to the mystery forms, to the symbolism, to the strivings of all human souls to be free for the whole of human history. So it is a privilege to go through this process, to learn a little bit more each week, try to become a little bit more wise each time, try to become more connected to that which lies beyond. It's always a struggle, but that is the nature of spiritual practice. And liturgy is spiritual practice. It is the core of our particular tradition. It is something that belongs to all of us. We are all the heirs of. I merely perform a particular role in it, but it isn't mine. So may we all celebrate the celebration of these mysteries and hold within ourselves this deep connection and relationship to wisdom. Can be aided and assisted through these celebrations is to be found everywhere, within us, inside of us, here, present, beyond all thought and speech, there, transcendently present. This eternal cross, which we find ourselves always at the center, looking across time and space, tradition, individuals, and looking above, beyond, through. May the mystery of that which hangs fixed heaven descend upon us, remain with us always.
More information and resources on Gnosticism, visit the Gnosis Archive at gnosis.org. That's GNOSIS.ORG. And the Gnosis Institute at gnosisinstitute.org. If you'd like to continue receiving these podcasts, please consider a voluntary subscription of either $13 or $25 a year. That's $1 to $2 a month to make it possible to continue to provide this service. Thank you.